Hello, I'm Maeve Doyle, and you're listening to A Private View. Today we have a bit of a departure from the regular format. In 2019, I had Christian Peake on A Private View in honor of Mervyn Peake's birthday. And at the end of the interview, an interview which was about the artist Maeve Gilmore, I asked Christian if she'd come back if everything she wanted for Maeve Gilmore came to pass. And a lot of it has. So we're going to play 2019 with Christian Peake about Maeve Gilmore, and I'm speaking to her today as well. Hello, Christian. We met because you sent me, or you heard me on Joe Good's show, and you sent me Maeve Gilmore's painting and Instagram. Is that how it happened?
That's how it happened.
Firstly, she had my name. Then she was a fabulous painter. Then she was married to Mervyn Peake. And now you're sitting here in the studio with me on Mervyn Peake's birthday after a visit with a prestigious gallery who's going to bring Maeve out of the shadows, hopefully.
Let's hope so. Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hi, Maeve.
Welcome.
Thank you.
You keep Maeve's collection, is that correct?
I keep part of it. I inherited it from my father, who was her oldest son.
And your father, Sebastian?
Sebastian
One of
Peake.
Three kids?
That's right. Sebastian, Fabian and Claire. And her oldest son was my dad. And when dad died in 2012, I inherited his section of Maeve and Mervyn's work. And as
I got chills because they're so bohemian. What an interesting life.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, we're a few minutes walk from his Frith Street studio that he had here. He was painting the reclining nude here, and Maeve was raising the family. But she happily was doing that. But I
and what a love story! I mean, my understanding is they met and fell in love on their first day of art school.
Yeah. Yeah.
This was in 1936?
1936, exactly. He was a teacher there, and she
was
a student.
What was the art school again?
Westminster School
of
Art.
That's right.
Yeah, that's where she was a student. She'd persuaded her dad to let her go to art school. He was a very staunch, strict Catholic from Northern Ireland. And she went to convent school her whole life and persuaded him, we don't know how, I think she was the youngest of six and very gorgeous and wily, managed to persuade him to let her go there. And she had up until that point been made to get changed with an entire covering from her neck down. She had also, that's what they did at the convent school.
Yeah.
In those days, I'm sure you know.
My mum was from
history.
That generation, yeah. Irish Catholics,
yeah.
Yes.
And there was a plastic covering that they used to have to put over themselves in the bath so that they didn't see their own body. So she went from that background.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's amazing.
It's
I just saw
incredible.
Edna O'Brien's Imagine with Alan Yentl.
Yeah, I saw that.
I mean, it's amazing how far we've come. When I start to worry about how far we have to go, we've come a long way.
A long way.
Imagine having a bath and having to hide your own body.
I mean, and imagine the feelings around your own body of what it is. And so when I look at her later nudes, I just think, well,
I know.
You know, there's one when she's got her vest down and her hands clasped behind her head. And it feels so much more powerful, the fact that she had had to cover herself entirely at school. So when she got to Westminster School of Art, it took her, I think, an hour to walk in because she was just stunned. It was like an overload, a sensory overload. And she called it the beginning of living. Because up until that point, it had been very religious. She called herself pious. It was very holy. It was very dutiful. You know, she was a very good daughter. And she did absolutely what she was told. And then she walked into the studio and Mervyn almost immediately asked for a date.
And was he a teacher at the time?
He was a teacher there. Naughty old Mervyn.
You but know, at the time I hate to say it, but at the time that was normal too.
That was just normal. Now I look at it and I think, oh, come on, man, give her a day, you know,
nope,
to just
not
enjoy
even a day.
Straight in there within, I think, 10 minutes. She describes herself as palpitating at the clay. And he came over and asked for a date. And she said
Can you imagine if that happened now? Your teacher hit on you at the first year of school.
He'd probably lose his job straight away.
Yeah.
Hashtag me too. It just wouldn't happen, would it? wouldn't happen.
But we're not judging. We're talking about historical context. And this was 1936, and she was at art school. And he was a teacher, and it was an authentic, real love story.
Yeah, and they did get married. No, yeah. So it wasn't, he wasn't...
A creative collaboration. She finished one of his books for him when he died.
Yeah,
I mean,
she did.
They were lovers. So, I mean, let's leave that.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, acknowledge
incredible.
It. Nod it, but...
Incredible.
But yeah. Yeah, it was. And he also... You know, he changed her world. It was a world, she said, that went from grey to colour.
Right.
You know, and she said after he died, she said, I miss him. I miss him. And I also miss how he helped me get to the essential heart of a painting. You know, and I think because they were both artists, they were able to share that. And he did teach her. He did help her. She wasn't from that world. Her dad was a doctor. She was born on Acre Lane, a very wealthy family. But her father had trained as a midwife in Northern Ireland. He was from a very poor family. And I mean, I think that's probably unheard of in 1870 something to train as a midwife. But he was a very bright, able doctor, and that's how he got out of Northern Ireland to come over to the UK. And what he would have seen over there, you know, women having 10, 12 babies, and he's their midwife. He left there, went to Edinburgh, got his medical exams there, and then became a ship's doctor. And it was on a boat that he met Maeve's mum. She was called Matty Lassell's car.
What a great name. What a great name.
Yeah, just, great name.
Yeah.
And she then was a spinster at 24, you know, as they were in those days. And her parents had taken her on holiday because they felt terribly sorry for her. Her sisters were married and she wasn't, you know. And I think
I love the smile on your face as you're saying all of this, but that was real.
Oh, completely. Yeah. You know, absolutely. She was almost written off. And then she was feeling slightly wobbly on the boat one day and went to the ship's doctor. And it was Dr. Eugene Gilmore that they all called the handsome doctor.
Oh, my God. So now we have doctors hitting on patients. It gets even better.
Yeah. And he was like really old. I think he was kind of 36
Stop
or
it.
Something.
Also unheard of.
Yeah. And then they met and fell in love, but
saved her.
He saved her, but actually it was her family. It was her resources. It was her finance. So he came with the medical, you know, career, but it was her that housed them in Acre Lane when Acre Lane had an acre of land, you know, on Brixton. In
Brixton.
Brixton, yeah, Correct, right in the heart London. Of Brixton.
Now, I heard that Maeve went to a finishing school in Switzerland.
Did.
So what you're saying to me is her father married into money.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Interesting legacy of powerful women. That's a good role model for Maeve, really, if you think about it. Because although things would have been one way outside of the house, inside of the house, Maeve would have been aware of those dynamics.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Was there six daughters, did you say?
There were six children, three girls, three boys.
And
she was the youngest.
Sent to Swiss finishing school to learn German, French and music?
Yes, exactly. And she was a really great linguist, Maeve, and a great piano player as well. And she, the story goes that one of the nuns at the finishing school said to her, cast down those insolent eyes, Maeve Gilmore, because she'd made eye contact with one of the nuns, which obviously was the height of boldness in those days. And we were told, I mean, I don't know how true this is, but we were told that she was asked to leave the finishing school, which I think is rather impressive, for posing on a diving board and having her photograph taken. But I actually think now that she was probably diving and someone took her photograph, but the nuns accused her of posing.
Oh, because she was a siren, she stood out, so I mean, everything was her.
Yeah, exactly.
I know it then.
And I think the nuns didn't like that vibe.
The attention,
she was incredibly beautiful. And I do sometimes think that also impacted on her career as an artist. I think people found it very difficult to accept that a very beautiful woman could be an artist. I think they liked the idea of an older, kind of paint-splattered, aging woman. They liked
that.
Or
a Gertrude Stein kind of character.
Exactly.
But Lee Krasner said the same thing in a documentary that's at the Barbican right now. She said Hans Hoffman said to her, oh, this doesn't even look like it's done by a woman.
Yeah. And a pretty one. Blimey, you're really good, you know, going way off the mark with that one.
So I'm going to put things in a bit of context here. Mervyn Peake was born in China
in
1911.
China, yeah. Yes.
He was an English writer, artist, poet, illustrator, best known for the Gormenghast books, mm-hmm. of which one of them, and we'll get to this later, may have finished and then had to give to the critics to
just
annihilate,
you know,
her.
Annihilate her.
And it was a love story for him to finish it. He was at his height in the 30s and 40s when he lived in London and was commissioned to produce portraits of well-known people. Mm-hmm. Friends with Dylan Thomas, Graham Greene, his work is included in the National Portrait Gallery, the Imperial War Museum. He got Parkinson's in his 40s, which would have stopped him from painting. In the last 10 years of his life, Maeve also stopped work just to take care of him. Mm-hmm. Is this correct?
Yes, yeah.
So that would have had a profound effect in the children of the family. I had a sick mother, and I know what it's like being a children in a family with a sick parent.
Yeah.
And she would have, everything would have stopped, and he died at a really young age, leaving her a widow.
Yes.
She would have been a widow at 50?
Yeah, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Because one of the things I want to mention to anyone listening is the wellspring of creativity that has come out of this family. Not only is there a link to Charles Darwin, there's a link to Phyllida Barlow, who was just part of Masterpiece and has had a show. It may not still be on at the Royal Academy.
It's just finished.
She taught at Chelsea School of Art and forever had the best students going to the Turner Prize. Her son is Eddie Peake. Her daughter's Florence Peake, both practicing recognized artists. This is what I know as someone outside of the family. Mm-hmm. As someone inside of the family, what is this wellspring of amazing creativity? Where does it come from? Wellspring.
I think that you grow up with whatever you grow up with, and you're surrounded by your family, and you don't know any different. As you were saying, you were raised by a mum who was unwell, and that's just your
you
don't know any different.
Kids are happy anyway. That sounds, I hope, no, I haven't offended anyone, but
no, exactly.
Happy kids are happy kids.
That's it. And they were very, very good at loving. That's what I always think about Mervyn and Maeve. They loved incredibly well, and that love has spread out amongst all of us, and we remain a very close family. And Phyllida and Fabian have got 5 children. You mentioned 2 of them, but Clover Peake and Tabitha Peake are both
the names.
Also work artists, poet, writers in their own right. And Lewis Peake, who is their other son, is also a very intelligent digital artist, which is slightly beyond what I can comprehend. And then Claire's children.
It's the future, isn't it?
It's the future. Yeah. And he understands that future. He's the person that I go to with all that. What's a JPEG? How do you, what is that? Lewis
and
is
he's already in artificial intelligence.
Yeah, exactly. And he's got a really long tongue. Sorry, that's just a fact. Sorry, I'll do that one. Sorry, Lewis.
Summerness.
It's unbelievable.
Thank you very much for that,
Greek restaurant once.
We'll go back to Maria Mulder. I love it.
Yeah.
Are you an artist?
I'm not, no. I'm a teacher and I've got 3 children.
What do you teach?
I'm an English teacher and I work with children who are dyslexic or are a bit tricky. I go for the tricky ones, like the tricky ones. But Claire's children, Claire is their daughter, and she's got 3 children, Scarlett, Titus and Jack. And Jack is a brilliant musician, and Titus is a super cool DJ, and Scarlett's fabulous.
And whose children are they?
Those are Claire's, Maeve's daughter.
This is good.
Yeah. And then I have 2 sisters, Catherine and Rose, and we're all... That's the only thing I'd say. It's quite a hard legacy to be amongst, because you can't, you almost feel like you can't begin, because blimey, look at that behind you.
Yes.
But I think for Fabian and Phyllida's children, they are, it's just them. They are, you know, if you kind of chip away, there's just, it's in their blood, and you can't be something other than that.
There's so many things I want to talk to you about, like ideas, whether or not an artist becomes recognized if someone, if the community isn't supporting them, because just to get the work out is all consuming.
Yeah.
So who bridges the gap between the artist's work, Maeve's work, and museums or galleries or the public? So maybe it's that kind of collective. There was a conversation this week about there's no schools of thoughts for artists anymore. And maybe the Peake family is just their own school of thought. Is it possible?
Yeah, isn't that lovely? I love the idea of that. I think so. We're very mutually supportive, and everything that I've done with Maeve, everyone is supporting. On I've got a WhatsApp group, as everybody does, of family now, I think, and we've got a cousin's WhatsApp group called Maeve, actually. And everything that I do for her, everyone is incredibly supportive and listening in now. Lots of Peakes and Peñates. Peñates, that's Claire's children.
Their name.
That surname, yeah.
Lovely.
Yes. Sure.
I'm struck by the amount of work she produced. I get the feeling that all of her waking moments were about creativity, and that was the way the family lived. Can you comment on that?
Yeah. So I think, like so many women at that time, her studio is in the house. She never had the luxury, I suppose, of a studio outside the house. So her work was very much the domestic, the life within that house. And I think that was looked down on for such a long time, because it was seen as, I suppose, an unimportant aspect of living, or unacknowledged. But so much of what she painted was about the domestic. It's her children, it's her family, it's the food, it's their everyday life, the what she calls the constant demands of domesticity. She turned that into her work. And as a child, I remember going to her house in Drayton Gardens, and the smell of oil and turpentine, that was how they lived, that was what they had in their homes. And Mervyn worked with children and life going on all around him, but she carried the weight of the family, and what she did enabled him to have his career as number one, and what she did was secondary to that. And she continued to work even during the war. I often think, where did she get the canvas and the paints from, you know? And she continued to...
Where did she get them?
I just don't know.
Okay, got it.
I don't know. Maybe Matty...
The way it goes,
Lassell's car got her, you know, made a few...
No one
knows someone who knows someone. Yeah. And they painted over a lot of their canvases. That's the thing they did, wasn't it, in those days? And she painted, I think, when the children were in bed, when she had her time. And I've just, as a... I've got the same makeup of children. I've got two sons and a gap and a daughter, and that's what she had. And I think... Blimey, I just about have time to do a few things for myself, let alone paint a huge canvas.
But I suggest to you that perhaps the painting gave her energy rather than take it away. So it was clearly a source she plugged into to get energy rather than to drain.
You're absolutely right. And she says that. She says that in her memoir, World Away. She says, I work best when there is life going on around me. And now that it's quiet, I find I have less inspiration. I don't know quite what to do with that quiet.
She wrote a memoir as well?
Yeah, she wrote a memoir, World Away, it's called. And it's incredibly moving, quite difficult to read, actually, as a family member and someone who loved them. But it's a beautiful memoir of their
life. What is the difficulty?
Their life was painful at times, as you said earlier. He did become very ill. And... what I find really interesting about Maeve is that I think, despite virtually no recognition, she had the emotional resilience to be an artist. And I think that artists watching them, they don't just need talent and stamina. They need emotional resilience, because I'm sorry, I don't mean to offend anyone, but it's an awful world to, you know, I've got half a toe in it and I find it quite hard.
The art world.
The art world. She talks about the weight, the constant wait and hope, the being postponed, you know, and you're expressing yourself and your innermost feelings. You're trying to create or provoke an emotion.
And then being judged.
And then you're judged, or worse, you're ignored, or you're belittled. And that's very difficult to sustain yourself through, I think. And Maeve could do that, and Mervyn could do that less.
Right.
He was not as emotionally resilient.
Interesting.
And she was his resilience. You know, she read ahead in the books he illustrated to find the passage that would suit him most. You know, she thought for him. She played music to him as he painted. She didn't have that in her own career, but she was able to remain resilient throughout. I mean, she painted from 1936 to 1976 with virtually no, you know, not a nod from anyone. And yet she could continue. And I find that really interesting.
I do too. I do too. And I mean, that if when you go through history and you see Dorothea Tanning or Lee Krasner or the other women who are that we don't even know the names of that were in the shadow of Jackson Pollock or in the shadow of Max Ernst. I'm not surprised that Maeve Gilmore didn't really even resent that she wasn't being acknowledged
because it
was normal again.
Yeah. And I really like to kind of make that clear that there was no bad feeling from her at all. That was absolutely her role. She was more than happy to be in it. She admired Mervyn very much. So that she didn't resent any of it. She wasn't resentful and she wouldn't like me to give the impression that she was. It's just with my 2019 eyes.
And that's what I want to talk to you about now. With your 2019 eyes, how can we bring Maeve out of what was normal in her history and into our history, where we are striving for an equality between female and male painters? Eventually, there'll be no gender before saying painter.
Yes.
It'll just be painter.
Yeah.
And having seen Maeve's work, I feel at ease saying it's of a quality that should be shown. It's of a quality of anyone in the Bloomsbury group. It is of the quality of an Edward Hopper. It's a, how would you describe
you, Maeve.
Her? It's a pleasure. I'm what's in store and how would you describe her work and where would we position it? And,
well,
what kind of an exhibition can we expect? Yeah. I feel like I'm lifting her.
Lifting her up. That's lovely. And that's what I've really hoped to do. It's what she did for Mervyn and it's what I want to do for her. You know, when we inherited the work, obviously Mervyn's work was, you know, it's Mervyn. He's been a huge part of our life. But when I inherited her work, as corny as this sounds, it's very much like thinking that you're inheriting costume jewellery. And then looking at it properly and realizing this is not glass and paste.
This is an English teacher and this is why we love them. That was a beautiful analogy.
But that's very much what I suddenly realized. These are diamonds and these are pearls that we've been sitting on and haven't even, you know, we did that ourselves. Her family did that. We looked to Mervyn first and that's because she did that. So
so it's a consciousness raising piece for everyone as well.
Absolutely.
What we see and what we don't see. What is the what is the reaction and response from people in the art world to Maeve's work when they see it? And when did you start the Instagram, by the way?
So I started Instagram 2 years ago.
Tell everyone what the handle is.
So it's Maeve Gilmore Collection, Maeve underscore Gilmore underscore collection. And I haven't ever done social media. I don't have Facebook things. I've just got this. Some Ian Jennings and Ian Archie Beck came to the house and they looked at their illustrators and gallerists and they came to the house and looked at it and it was Ian
that looked at her work.
Looked at her work just from personal interest, really. I was going down a blind alley. I didn't know what to do with it. I just felt that it needed to be out and dusted off, framed. Much of her work wasn't framed, cleaned, you know, and lifted up, like you were saying. And they came to the house and it was Ian suggested, have you done Instagram? And that started it. And as soon as I started that, people started responding very well to it and galleries have started to follow her. And I then started to look more into what she did and realised that one of her first shows was at the Redfern Gallery.
Right, which is in Cork Street.
Which is in Cork Street, run by a very nice Irishman, Connor Mullen, I think his name is. And he wasn't aware that she'd shown there. So he was, you know, looking through the back catalogue and then realising that she had. I was teaching myself about her, really. And I discovered that after she finished at the finishing school, her family were absolutely set against her settling down with Mervyn. And so they sent her to Germany to learn German and to study art at
Bonn. And this isn't about an independent spirit. I guess what we need to mention at the time is that women really were not allowed to work for their own money and financial independence. Mm. So if your family's against you doing something, the chances are they can cut you off from family finances.
Yeah.
So this isn't about standing up to your family or all the things we think of now. This is about actually your life being cut off from financial support. Would it be fair to say at the time a woman's job was her family? That was her way of making money because there was no work as such?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And then,
so to disagree with your family has massive consequences. It's not just a falling out emotionally.
No, absolutely right. And it's a cutting off of those ties, which unfortunately did happen in the end because she married him and he did not convert to Catholicism. And that was seen, you know, he was a penniless artist. I do understand from their point of view.
But the family had money, didn't his family have money?
Her family had money. So he was, remember, he's a midwife. So he didn't come with the money. He had a career, though. And he was a GP in the house on Acre Lane. So he had a very stable
member of the community.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they went to church in St. James's Spanish Place, which is a very prestigious church at that time. Mervyn and Mavid wanted to go somewhere quietly to get married, but the family wouldn't allow it. And they had a very high mass, a traditional Latin mass, to get married. Apparently, when they knelt down at the altar, Mervyn had one blue sock on and one pink sock on, which I think was the only nod to something that wasn't absolutely staunchly Catholic and traditional.
He was a breath of fresh air for her, no doubt. And that's why they remained and always were lovers. But what I wanted to talk to you a bit about now is there anything coming up where we, the public, can see Maeve's work other than your Instagram? Is there a group show? I know there's one of the things I know is that everyone is looking for painters who can paint.
Mm.
And Maeve can paint.
Yeah.
So whether those painters are from present or past, people who are overlooked through history, it'll be interesting to see where she comes up. Now, is there a selling point? Have they been put through auction? Are they in any collections?
No, not really.
What are the dimensions of the paintings? Are they oil or acrylic? I'm guessing oil.
Everything. When she first started, it was very much oil. And then when she went through this Mervyn's illness, she went from a very controlled oil painter to a huge scale canvas or board, and chalk and pastel, and she used palette knives, and she went from signing her name very delicately and in a very demure, well-raised, you know, Gilmore fashion, to carving it in with the end of her paintbrush. And I think that's the thing with Maeve's work, is that the arc is incredible. Mervyn's remains fairly consistent. Maeve's goes from quite sedate, overly romantic almost, to very visceral, powerful, passionate pieces on large scale, where you can see she doesn't want to be so controlled. And that piece that I was talking about, where presumably she is standing in amongst her kitchen with saucepans and a cat and her hands behind her head and her vest down by her waist, you know, for a girl who was raised not to look at her body and to cover it at all times.
That's a journey.
That's a real journey. And she was absolutely pro-feminism, but it wasn't called that then, you know.
No.
Her daughter Claire accused one of her classmates of being rather liberal with the young men, and Maeve said, "You will not speak about her like that. She is a generous girl, and that's all she is."
You know, that's a great statement.
Yeah,
sexually generous.
Yes, it was
amazing.
A lovely thing to
be. I like that. So this is a very blunt question.
Yeah.
So I hope I don't trod on family feelings here. But with someone like Phyllida Barlow and her connections in the art world and her children, is there not a way of moving Maeve's recognition through the academies and the art world through the system into our consciousness a bit faster?
I think that
it would seem she's positioned to be definitely moved into the spotlight with yourself and the whole family.
I think that that's a question that people probably think about. But I know as an individual myself, the work it takes to get anywhere you want to be in life.
Right.
And, you know, like all great anything. You look at Usain Bolt and you think, oh, he's good at running. You don't look at what he's trained for years and years and years to get there.
That's right.
You know, Phillida raised a family herself. She raised five children. She taught. She worked.
She, you know, also was very later in life before anyone gave her a nod.
You know,
I'm not asking her to take on extra work. Believe me, I do respect and admire her.
I understand your question completely, but I suppose my viewpoint
she's done enough.
Yeah, and also, you know, Eddie is incredibly successful. He's worked unbelievably hard for that success.
But people knew about Eddie before they knew about Phillida.
Yeah, and now the names all go together. But the name I think everyone should know, obviously Phillida and Eddie are superb, as everybody is, but is Fabian Peak. Now, Fabian is Mervyn and Maeve's son, is Phillida's husband, is Eddie's dad. You know, imagine being that. He's worked all his life. He's a phenomenal artist. And I believe Fabian is art more than anyone I've ever known. His mum and dad, his wife, all of his children.
You have a lifetime of work here.
A lifetime.
You have a lifetime of
work. It's a wonderful problem to have. But what you do with all of this work is, in a roundabout way of answering your question, I hope an exhibition. I hope that she is seen and someone thinks, this is someone that I want to show. I think that sometimes the art world hold before you go out there and put your foot out and say, right, this is a person to look at. And I just hope there have been some collectors. Victor Wind has been very supportive from the Last Tuesday Society. He's been in my attic with me many times. And Pierre Spake is also a collector and has done some beautiful things with Maeve's work and has taken her to the London Art Fair and various different places. So there is a small gathering of people. She was very supported in the 70s by the names jumped out of my head, and he was such an incredible, the Woodstock Gallery, sorry, and that's where she largely showed, actually, is the Woodstock Gallery.
I think the overall feeling I get in this, you know, the long Van Gogh show that's been on at the Tate is nobody gets into the public eye unless everyone wants them to.
Yes.
And it's that kind of community around her that's bringing her up at the right time. So I'm sure we will see it. I'm sure you'll get there. I'm hoping you'll come back and talk to us again when this happens.
Love to.
Christian, hello.
Hello, Maeve. Hi.
In preparation for this, I re-listened to the things we've talked about, and I almost am... Firstly, I admire your vision and the fact that you made this happen. I also think it's almost better that it came up about now, when a lot of painters are talking about domestic activity in the home and this idea of women's work and women painting. And it's things that are hard to say because it should never have been one or the other, but life just worked like that. So what's happened since I saw you last? The wild coincidence is we met for Mervyn Peake's birthday, and it's just been Maeve's 14th of June, 105th birthday.
Yeah, exactly as you say. Actually, I don't know if I said it in the original interview, but my sisters and I inherited Maeve's archive, or a third of Maeve's archive, in 2012. And as I'm sure I did say in the original interview.
Yes, and you said something amazing that only you would say. You thought you were inheriting costume jewelry, and upon further reflection, you realized you had precious gems.
Yeah, the real deal. And absolutely at that point, I remember really strikingly one of the images that I was looking at, and it was upside down, and I called my sister. And from that moment on, I think my belief in her has been absolute, and I didn't question it. I think previously I had thought, oh, well, you know, Maeve kind of had a hobby sideline while Mervyn did the real stuff. And I think at that point I realised, no, this is it. This is the real stuff. And actually this is the domestic gaze. This is life. This is the stuff of life.
What was it about that one picture?
It was the pose of the figures. They were so measured and real, and that moment of movement captured so simply and beautifully. And I realised at the same time that she was actually painting a process. She was painting a process of winding wool. And I think that actually it all happened at the same time, that understanding that actually it was the process of making that helped her. And it helped her through some really tough years, actually. And it all suddenly kind of felt like an understanding hit me that my faith was just absolute. And all of the pieces of her story kind of fell into line in my mind. And I understood more about what she was doing and why she was doing it. And from that moment on, I've just been really bold, actually. I'm far bolder than I would be if it was about myself. And I've been contacting people, and I contacted the incredible Jennifer Higgy, and I just said to her, pardon my boldness, excuse me, but it's Maeve's birthday. And I said, would you mind doing a piece on Maeve? It's her birthday, thinking that she may not, but she did. And Jo Scotland saw it, and Jo Scotland contacted me and said to me, it's just reminded me of her work, because Jo and I had been in contact previously, and he said, I'd really love to have a conversation. And that's when the conversation about the exhibition at Studio Voltaire came about, which is where we are now.
Now, did you curate this show with the Studio Voltaire people, or did you and your sisters curate it on your own? And how did you pick the work that's there? You have a vast collection.
I think to a certain extent, I supported the choices, but not absolutely either. You know, they are the specialists, and it was really, they were given a kind of free rein to take the exhibition in any way that they wanted to. My concern, and they raised it, you know, early on, was the condition of some of the work, because with Mervyn and Maeve's work, often when I was going through it, it sometimes was hard to tell whose was whose, but you always knew the kind of shorthand for Mervyn was that his were framed and hers weren't.
Wow.
And that impacted the condition of hers. And they did this incredible thing that I need someone else to explain it to me. Whenever they moved, which they did constantly, they took all of their paintings with them. So their paintings were incredibly well travelled, and that made a mark, literally.
They didn't want to live without them. They definitely didn't want to live without them, though.
I mean, do you think that was it? The just needing that current work around them?
And especially Maeve's work, because it was the furniture and the walls. And with the paintings, I know a lot of artists. You know, we interviewed an artist last week, and I asked him a question about if he could own one piece of work, what would it be? And he wanted to buy back all the works that his galleries had sold from the beginning of his career. He wanted all his work back.
Yeah, wow.
I know.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. There are a lot of artists who don't want to part with their work. They don't feel their identities together if they're not with it.
That's really, I mean, she says that in her memoir. She said that then comes the time to sell, and only then things become ugly.
Oh.
And I think that there's that, the beauty in the making and the beauty in the process. And then, yeah, the selling, it is ugly. It's a horrible world, that one, isn't it? It suddenly goes quite grubby.
It can do. I wish that there was a more elegant relationship between artists and collectors. And I think back to the days of Leo Castelli, when work was placed in a collection and they kept it. We've seen a lot of those collections come to auction recently, but I do think there was a time when artists maybe did like their work being in a collection if they thought it was being cared for.
Yeah, and I think that they felt, I think both of them felt really supported by their collectors at certain points in their lives, you know, and that certainly the collectors were supporting them as working artists.
Are you selling the show at Studio Voltaire?
That's one of the conversations at the moment. There's been a lot of interest in her work.
I bet.
There's been a lot of people who have expressed interest in buying it, but there's also been some gallery interest in having Maeve as part of their collections.
Yeah, or making prints from the originals.
Yes, that's something that Studio Voltaire are doing at the moment, actually.
Are they making prints from that? So people will be able to buy prints of Maeve's work?
Yes.
This is incredible. And I want to just stop you for a second. But this idea that the people who archive the collections and care for the collections are the real reason work gets seen. I mean, in her lifetime, this would never have happened. You made this happen after Maeve died. And it was because of the care and attention you gave the work and the energy you breathed into it. And maybe timing. I was mentioning a show about women's work that was on last week, and it was Caroline Walker. And Maeve was doing this 50 years ago or more.
I mean, Caroline Walker came to in conversation we had at Studio Volta, my uncle Fabian and I did last week with Hetty Judah, which was fantastic, actually. Caroline Walker, so happy to have her there. But
the similarities between the two of them are wild.
Yeah. And the other similarity is that actually things haven't really changed massively.
Right.
You know, they're still, what they're looking at is the same thing, and how they're having to navigate the world as a woman and a wife and a mother or partner and an artist is really tough. And I think it's still really tough. I don't think it's eased up on women. I think women, creative women, are in a really, really difficult situation. I don't think it's improved since Maeve's time.
It's funny because Phyllida de Barlow is related to Maeve Gilmore, and her work when she was with children was a lot about putting rabbit ears on television sets and the interior life of women. And even Phyllida de Barlow, who's still she's alive and working, had to spend a lot of time working with domestic. I'm going to say something here that I'm surprised I'm going to say. Maybe they change the way we look at domestic life. Maybe it becomes interesting.
I think that's a really interesting thought, because why has it become something that people want to know about? You know, I think when Maeve was working, there was a dismissal of her work. It's almost, she was kind of laughed at. I hate to say that. It makes me physically
ill.
React saying that. Yeah. But it was laughed at. And, you know, it was her, people didn't want to see her children. People didn't want to see her family around her and her interiors. Why has that changed? I'm interested in that as well. Why are people starting to think, I want to see what she was looking at. I want to see what women were looking at.
Which, if you don't know, Caroline Walker's work is a tribute to the motifs and symbolic language of housework. And she paints it in almost a religious way.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think her work, you know, it speaks to all of us women who have those absolutely silent, silent, powerful moments of home keeping, children keeping, you know, nest making, that are unseen moments. And I think that what I spoke about this quite briefly in the talk that Fabian and I gave, but what I'm always struck by as a mother is how much I can achieve in 3.5 minutes. You know, I amaze myself, and I have to stop sometimes and go, blimey, look what you've just done, Christian. You know, you fed the dog, you cleaned that shelf of the fridge, you put their uniform away, you hung up the washing, you sorted the sofa out, you got their bag ready for the morning, and you put the supper on. But there's no one to see it.
You did say that Maeve worked from 1936 to 76 without a nod or a look in from anyone.
What she did have was she had friends. That's what she did have. And I think that probably sustained her. And she had people who had galleries. And so she had a friend who would show her again and again and again. But what didn't happen was that that exhibition led on to that exhibition, led on to that exhibition. But she started incredibly well. She started with her first show, was a solo show in 1939, curated by Lucy Wertheim at the Wertheim Gallery in Mayfair. And then war, obviously. And then her second show was a joint show at the Red Fern,
which is still on Cork Street.
And actually, I think, well done them in 1945 for putting their faith in Maeve and showing her. She was a joint show with Jean-Georges Simon, I don't know if I'm saying that right, and Constantine Guise, they were both showing with her.
No, and at the time, her work was considered to be semi-abstract and somewhat spiritual, but still figurative. So in my opinion, it would have been perfect for the time. It had that Edward Hopper kind of quality to it.
Yeah, absolutely. But she says about herself, I'm just reading from her memoir here, around this time, I had an exhibition at the Redfern Gallery. Looking back, I wonder how I dared exhibit any of the pictures. It wasn't arrogance or confidence, but a kind of blindness.
Oh.
And, you know, she wrote that much later in life.
What are in the memoirs, Christian?
It's such a beautiful memoir, but it's a memoir of her life with Mervyn. And so the focus, you know, she, everything I'm doing for her, I she taught me. She did this for Mervyn. She was his champion and his steward.
So you've just turned the table and now you've taken her role and you're doing it for her.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Her son, my dad, Sebastian, her Maeve's eldest son, Sebi, he also did it for his father. So I also watched him and I learned so much from my dad. He adored Maeve. She was his hero, really. And the respect and love and admiration he had for her meant that he continued her. He took the baton from her in terms of Mervyn. And then when I inherited everything, there's definitely, I know that my drive comes from her and it also comes from my dad. And it brings them all closer to me by doing this, actually.
That's the thing about art. There is a real presence of the person. And I think, bear with me, but sometimes I think when I look at Van Gogh's work or Maeve's work, they did leave some of themselves on the canvas. The energy's there.
Absolutely. That, you know, is one of the things that it's so powerful for me. It means so much to me, actually, that a part of them remains with us. Absolutely. You know, the strokes that she made with the brush are still there. Her motion is still there. And the way she saw the world is still there. There's very few situations where you can say that that is a fact, that part of them remains, but it does with them.
This may be the third time I've said it, but I almost think Maeve's work is going to be looked at in its best light now. And had you not taken the time to tell everyone about her, it wouldn't have got the one chance when people actually want to see domestic work, to see what's going on in a woman's life, to go back and look at how we got to where we are now. And Maeve's sort of the missing link in that story. And there's a full body of work and a very artistic family, which it would seem if you take it apart, she would have had a lot to do with the success of Mervyn and...
Oh, absolutely for Mervyn. I mean, she wrote out lots of his manuscripts. She typed them out with her, you know, single fingers. Oh, Gorman Garth, she did those. She did the gallery proofs. She helped rewrite those. She read to him as he was illustrating work. And in the later years, when he was very unwell, she read through the books to find the passages that she thought he would most appeal to his style. Yeah, absolutely. And she put herself second to him in order to promote him, and she turned down two artist in residence opportunities, one at the University of Indiana in 1954 and one at the University of San Diego in 1962, both because Mervyn was too unwell for her to leave him.
I'm going to ask you what you've learned in this journey. I know you said you kept them closer to you, but also, you've become almost an agent or a dealer in your own right. I mean, not dissimilar to the Basquiat sisters, you're taking care of Maeve's estate or collection or reputation. We were talking about the courage you have to speak up on her behalf and to phone press people and studios and maybe talk about licensing for print for her work. What's going on with you through this artwork?
Such an amazing question, Maeve. That really is. I've thought about that a lot recently. In many ways, it gives me a direct line to her. And that's a joyful thing for me. I talk to her a lot. Maeve and I talk a lot. As strange as that might sound, I know it does sound strange.
No, it doesn't.
But we do. And it also returns me to my dad, who I miss very much. And in honouring Maeve, I'm honouring him. And that is extremely important to me because he was a wonderful man and a wonderful father. And also, you know, I know that there are many people that aren't necessarily for scripture and church, but for me, very much at the centre of it, it is in giving that you receive. And I would say that's been tenfold for me with Maeve. Absolutely, it is in giving my time that I've received so much. I've learned so much. When I first started doing this and an artist said to me that they painted on linen, I thought, and I might have said this in the interview earlier, that I thought they meant they painted on sheets.
You didn't say that, but it's a good one.
I mean, and it's the truth. And from my family, that seems entirely rational that you paint on a sheet. I wouldn't think that's odd.
Because the whole house was a canvas. Every surface in the house was a canvas, yes.
Everything, absolutely everything. And so, yeah, that's completely normal. So I kind of slightly started waxing lyrical about, you know, what a fantastic approach and lovely. I'd love to see some of them on sheets and were there any particular sheets that they like more than others. So embarrassing when I kind of realised. So
beautiful.
Well, there's so many things like that I've learned that Maeve has taught me.
But this week for Maeve's birthday, you had an interview on Women's Hour. Before I go and listen to it now, can you tell me what that was like? Because they would have a point of view on her not having a career during her time, definitely.
Yes. And I think that one of the things that's really important about this is that to note that Mervyn was a tremendous champion of Maeve as well. He was right behind her. You know, she called her life with him the beginning of living, having been reared like something out of the Handmaid's Tale, you know.
Right. Strict religious upbringing.
Yeah. And he was the beginning of living and he was life from black and white to colour. So he absolutely supported her entirely. But I think Women's Hour very much what was their interest in it was the undiscovered woman, the woman that was put second to the husband's career, and also the way in which I have become involved as the granddaughter. They were very interested in, but it was a kind of out-of-body experience.
Out-of-body experience because it was something you didn't see yourself doing, but you're doing it for Maeve Gilmore's work.
Yeah, exactly. And then I can speak freely. It's really easy for me. You know, what's been interesting is that on the Instagram account that I have for her, I've had the most amazing messages, incredible, hundreds and hundreds, one from a man. And that's interesting to me, you know, that's interesting to me. But it certainly has struck a chord with some of the things I was saying, with some of the women who were listening, who are artists, and so many that it's the same. It's that nothing really has changed, that theirs is the domestic wrong, and that they have to find the time to carve out the time. As Maeve said, the important thing was to make something and to hope. But to even find that time to make something is tough nowadays.
But for her, it was also a spiritual practice, I think. In the original interview, you said that she produced more when she had less time. There was something about the energy she got from being busy all the time that created more time for her to paint. However that works, time doesn't always work out equally in every kind of mental state you're in.
No, that's absolutely right. And don't they say, if you want something done, ask a busy person?
Yes.
I think it's that kind of thing, isn't it? And that's exactly right. You're remembering it perfectly, that she says that it's now with more time and less friction that I find it harder to paint.
She wasn't inspired in the same way.
Mm.
But the other thing we talked about in the last interview, and I've sort of looked into it just in preparation for this, and also because I was a little bit startled by all the symbols and signs and imagery and of the timing, you and I talking and then Studio Voltaire and the birthdays. And you said, and now I think this is going to happen, that one of the people who you think is the greatest artist who didn't get the recognition he deserved was Fabian Peake. And yes. I feel like you're going to turn your high beams on his career at some point.
Well, you know, Fabian, I think there are other high beams on him at the moment, and I can't say anything, but he is, to me, not only an absolutely wonderful uncle who has been such a great support to my sisters and I, and just a lovely person to be around. He also, and I said this in the Studio Volta conversation, that Fabian is art in many ways to me. He's such an incredible, dynamic artist. The knowledge that he has developed over the years, he has taught himself and learned so much about so many different things to stimulate different, you know, work patterns and ideas. And his mum and dad were artists, his wife and all of his five children. He's surrounded entirely by it. And his work is incredible. Is absolutely incredible. He could teach us all things about what it is to be a human. Fabian could.
When is the show on until, the Maeve Gilmore show?
Here's the incredible thing. It was going to be on until early July, and then they said, could we extend it? And we said, absolutely. And then to the end of July, and then they said, actually, we'd like to extend it again to August the 7th.
This is interesting.
Which is my birthday.
No, Leo.
Yeah.
If you're listening and want to see, the show's just titled Maeve Gilmore, correct?
Yes.
It's at Studio Voltaire, 1A Nelson's Road, London, SW4, 7J4. The galleries open Wednesday to Sunday, 10 to 6. Email if you want more information. Clearly, if they're selling prints, I would email to get on a waiting list because they won't be around long. info@studiovoltaire.org.
Maeve, I just would like to say that you've also taught me a great deal. Hearing you talk about art, I think I have not yet heard somebody else talk about art in the way that you do. Your knowledge and the way that you express it is so natural, and it's thank you for sticking with Maeve and for seeing her and believing in her all that time ago. I appreciate it so much, and I just you're such safe hands. I just feel absolutely safe with you talking about her, and I appreciate this so much. Thank you.
It's a pleasure. I've never said it before, but obviously she's a namesake, so the affinity is right there. And I what did you call her? How did you address her?
Granny Maeve.
Oh, it's going to make me cry. I'm going to thank you for your time and encourage everyone to go see the show at Studio Voltaire.
Thank you so much, Maeve.
Thank you. You've been listening to Maeve Doyle's Private View. I am an art critic and artistic director at Maddox Gallery. This podcast is produced by Will Fitzpatrick at Soho Radio. The music is by Khurshid Homi. Thank you for listening.